Welcome back, folks. Third hour of the War Room is on. I'm actively trying to drag in this video of from Sargon of Akkad, a.k.a. Carl Benjamin, in his video on Aragorn's tax policy, the difference between George R. Martin and J.R.R. Tolkien and their what they value and why some of their stories resonate with us and others don't. I just dropped it in there, number one. Let me know when you have that. We'll go to it. In studio with me is Dr. Charles Cornish Dale, a.k.a. Raw Egg Nationalist. Follow him on X at BabyGravy9. And RawEggNationalist.com is where you can find his new book, The Last Men, Liberalism, and the Death of Masculinity. So we can go to this video here. This is, again, from Sargon of Akkad. The video is called something about Aragorn's tax policy. But this is the very end. I thought this was a very inspiring last couple minutes. Let's watch.
His storytelling thereby acts as a narcotic in which he attempts to demoralize us in the same way that he himself has been demoralized. He is trying to make us accept that the rule of Sauron is inevitable. And it is in this frame which his own story is trapped, contained, and strangled. The question, what is Aragorn's tax policy, is the first step down this road. And what then, we can ask, is the result of accepting the reign of Sauron? Will men resign themselves to the boot of the outsider being forever on their neck? Will they give up all pretense of morality, of heroic struggle, of self-sacrifice, of attempting to bring a just moral order into existence, even if that moral order is deeply flawed? Well, in Morgoth's essay about Warhammer 40,000, he actually answered this question, as he wrote, "The answer to George R.R. Martin's question, what would Aragorn's tax policy be, is 10,000 psykers sacrificed daily to feed energy into the corpse of a god emperor holding the line against the forces of hell itself. No, men will not give up the struggle, and no matter how bad things get, we will, in fact, cling to whatever kind of order we can bring together in the face of evil. No matter how insufficient it might seem to a liberal in their comfortable armchair, and no matter what the cost. It doesn't matter how late the hour, how dark the night, how dire the situation. We will never give ourselves over to the disgusting, weak, liberal nihilism that declares that everyone is as bad as everyone else. We will not capitulate to the moral reign of Sauron, the perversion of the world, and the despoiling of the very notion that there can be a worthy good. And no sad boomer libtard is going to change that. It is not inevitable that Sauron wins. It is not inevitable that the world slips into vice, and it is not guaranteed that the heroes will fail. We will do whatever it takes, for however long is necessary, because the struggle is the forces of good against the forces of evil, the forces of order against the forces of chaos, the forces of justice against the forces of injustice, and it is the only war worth fighting. And so I am afraid, George, that the time is nigh for you to pick a side and finish your book."
Absolutely fantastic stuff, again, from Sargon of Akkad, a.k.a. Carl Benjamin. I watched this whole video about Lord of the Rings, but then he ends with this 5 minutes of like, no, this is a fight of good against evil, and it doesn't matter what the cost is. It was so inspiring. I loved that. Powerful stuff, man.
Yeah, seriously powerful stuff. And the Warhammer 40K stuff is very funny because, of course, you know, Warhammer 40K, as it has become, and Warhammer as it has become more popular, has also been subject to a kind of Redditification where people are like, you know, you're not supposed to like the Space Marines, you know, you're not supposed to be rooting for humanity, right? You know, they're like space Nazis, you know.
Yeah,
you know, the Emperor
yeah.
is you know, the Emperor is immortal space Hitler. But
sorry.
Yeah, sorry, it's cool.
Sorry, it's awesome, actually. It's very cool. And if you want to like the orcs, you can do that too. Yep. More power to you. But yeah, I loved that response. You know, what is the tax policy? 10,000 psykers fed down. Because if you don't know, the Warhammer, that is the Warhammer setting. Basically, to uphold humanity, they have to sacrifice 10,000 people a day. And hey, that's the system. You got to work within it, right? We'll be right back. We're on the other side. Stay with us.
G-Man, all the free-flowing methylene blue is now mine!
No way, you evil scum. Methylene Blue is for everyone. Order Methylene Blue at the alexjonesstore.com.
We're gonna make it, men!
Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at the alexjonesstore.com.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on The War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour of The War Room is on. Raw Egg Nationalist has been kind enough to give us 2 hours of his time. We're going to take your calls. His book is called The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. It can be found at rawegnationalist.com. At BabyGravy9 is how you follow him on X. And I see the lines are filling up, and we'll go to your calls in just a minute. Can you tell us a little bit more about the book? Like, what are people going to learn from this? Who's the intended audience? Is this for young men looking to protect themselves from the wiles of feminism, or is this for, like, who's the book written for?
I think it's actually written for a variety of different audiences. I mean, there is direct practical advice in the book about, you know, protecting or conserving your masculinity, developing your masculinity, how to protect yourself against exposure to endocrine disrupting chemicals, that kind of thing. So there's, I mean, it's a part of my work, really, that I actually, you know, I paint quite a dismal picture, you know, of the kind of biological reality of life today. But I also do try to empower people to do things, because there are things that you can do. You can protect yourself. You might not be able to eliminate your exposure to microplastics, but you can mitigate it significantly just through simple things like not drinking water from a plastic bottle,
right,
or not heating food in plastic containers in the microwave.
Or vacuuming kind of your house more often.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, it's directed at men who are looking to improve their masculinity, to develop their testosterone. But it's actually a serious philosophical book, and it's framed in a serious philosophical way. I mean, I do think that there is something to this notion that actually the political crisis today is also a biological crisis. And so it is a serious, philosophically informed attempt actually to redirect this whole discourse about masculinity and about the kind of course of liberal society in a more biological direction. So it will appeal to lots of different people. I mean, it's written as a popular book, so it's not impenetrable. It's not written as an academic book. It's not written, you know, like my PhD was. You know,
right.
It's not kind of referenced like a PhD or whatever, and it's aimed at a popular audience. But it's a serious book. It's a weighty tome.
A weighty tome indeed. Of course, it's not your fault that you're painting a dismal picture. You are presenting reality, and reality at this point, rather dismal, one might say. So again, the book is The Last Men, Liberalism. Sorry, why can I not find it here? The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. Sorry, I just wanted to get it right there. From Skyhorse Publishing, and you can find it at raweggnationalist.com. And again, it just fits perfectly into InfoWars as an outlet. As we've always said, you know, there are two sort of approaches that we take. You have to try to solve these problems at the systemic level while also not being victims to the stuff on an individual level. Mm. And this fits perfectly, right? We need to correct the systems that are poisoning us, that are, diminishing our testosterone. But we can't wait on the whole system to change. You also need to be taking actions in your own life to mitigate some of the more devastating consequences of the modern world. So it just fits in perfectly. And again, with MAHA and MAGA, it's like this whole movement, however you want to define it, it really is like the InfoWars Alex Jones movement that brought all these seemingly disparate threads together. And in that way, you really open up to people that aren't necessarily aligned with us politically, because everybody recognizes you need clean air, you need clean water. I've gotten in, you know, in-depth conversations with, you know, hippie chicks at parties about what water filter they like, because it's like we might not have anything in common, but we both eat food and we both want the food not to be poisoned. Is that not something we can come together on? So there's really a lot of opportunities for unity when it comes to health, biology, this sort of stuff.
Yeah, there is. And I mean, one of the interesting things about the recent development of politics in the States, about the election campaign in particular, was that actually, you know, the Democrats didn't offer an alternative to RFK Jr.
Right.
There was no left-wing Maha.
Right.
That was just completely absent from the campaign. That was like a unique selling point for Trump once RFK Jr. got on board. And so it is a unifying issue, and it should be a unifying issue. But it's interesting actually to see the way that actually the left has abandoned health.
Yeah.
And so much of, you know, I mean, it was left-wing hippies in the 1960s and 70s. Who were talking about raw milk and about getting enough sunlight and about reconnecting with nature and avoiding food laced with pesticides, organic food, all this kind of stuff. And yet now it's raw milk is a right-wing dog whistle.
Yeah.
You know? It's very strange. It's very strange.
But, you know, it's sort of breaking out of that mold. So I was just thinking, I hadn't really thought about this yet, but I was hanging out with some people I know that are very normie, like they don't want to know anything about what goes on here. Like they just are totally uninterested and very, very much normie. But the wife said something about, yeah, we're trying to avoid that, you know, just avoid the microplastics. Mm. And I was like, you know about microplastics? Like what? How do you know about, and you care about it? You don't think that's a weird thing to avoid? Because, you know, it's so weird talking to people and you're like, you know, fluoride lowers the IQ. And people are like, well, that's fine. You know, it's like, well, what? Why are you fine with this? So it's really not a right-wing thing anymore, right? But it is, and we need to sort of let people know that, like, hey, look, these microplastics are being spread kind of on purpose. Like, they could have stopped this at any point. They want you weak. Like, you know, sort of they understand microplastics are being introduced to this idea, and they get it. They haven't really drawn the conclusions out of it that maybe they need to. But clearly, you know, the other beautiful thing about Maha comes things like tallow. We didn't have to pass a law to tell fast food companies to start cooking in tallow anymore. They did it because the market changed, because that there was a demand for it, and so they're filling the demand. So really, I mean, in terms of like true success, Maha, that aspect of this movement has had more success, I think, than just about any other part.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is really the kind of blueprint, actually, I think, for the future of politics. It's really the foundation of a kind of broad political movement that can actually draw people from the left and the right together in pursuing the same objectives. I mean, surely we want our children to be healthy. We don't want our children to grow up with metabolic dysfunctions, with reproductive problems, with, you know, low fertility, low testosterone, all these kinds of things. And so, I mean, yes, I think it's a real change. And, you know, when I first came on the scene, a lot of people would, especially on the right, would say to me, well, you know, why does health matter? Why are you presenting this as a political thing? And I'm like, trust me, this is political. I mean, health is the health of the I've said this before, that a nation is only as strong as the individuals of which it's composed.
Right.
That's the basic kind of insight of raw egg nationalism that I became the figurehead of that has kind of transitioned into Maha and fed into Maha. But like, yeah, I mean, you can make an almost like an apolitical case for something like Maha. And that's why it's so powerful.
Yeah.
And the longer that the Democrats don't actually really sort of understand that, I mean, the more the advantage goes to whoever has RFK Jr. in their camp and whoever is kind of leading the Maha movement. But yeah, I think it's been a big success. It's been very positive. I mean, you know, okay, you've got people, you know, of course they're abusing RFK Jr. and he's still got members of his family speaking out about him and calling him this and that and saying he's a bad guy. But, you know, I mean, it's an overwhelmingly positive movement. The objectives are overwhelmingly positive, like protecting the children, protecting the environment, conserving what's important for the next generation. I mean,
well, you know, but then you look at the left and it's like their number one topic the last couple of years has been trans children. So I guess it's no wonder they're not jumping on the Maha train. There's something about their belief system that's fundamentally out of step with nature. So, you know, maybe it's an inevitability that all this stuff becomes right wing
well,
at a certain point.
I mean, in the book, then there's a chapter in the book specifically about the gay frogs controversy and about why Alex Jones was right. But in particular, It's about, there's a new study, or a reasonably new study, it was new when I wrote the book, that shows for the first time really a direct link between exposure to endocrine disrupting chemicals during gestation, so in the womb, and transgenderism later in life.
Right.
And there was always the prima facie case for that was always there. It was there when Alex Jones was talking about the Tyrone Hayes atrazine frog experiments in 2015. But now and it's been a subject actually that researchers haven't wanted to touch. So they could have done the research. They could have followed on from the frog studies in 2010 and said, okay, if atrazine is doing this to frogs, let's look at rates of transgenderism and let's see if they correlate with exposure to atrazine.
Right.
Let's plot on a map of America, you know, because you can plot how much atrazine is sprayed over, you know, I mean, there are maps you can bring up on Google Maps now that will show you where atrazine is sprayed the most in the US. And, you know, you could look at rates of transgenderism and see if there's a correlation, and then you could go from there. They just didn't do it because it was politically explosive. Well,
and I think they actually lobbied to not do it, right? There was a potential bill coming forward that would have made them do these tests, and the companies lobbied to not have them done because they knew what the answer would have been, I think.
Yeah, and so you know, but now there's this study that shows, you know, like it was a French boys, and their mothers had been exposed to this estrogenic chemical called diethyl stilbestrol, which was given to women who had bad cases of morning sickness and had miscarried before. So it was given to them while they were pregnant, and then the boys who were given it ended up with something like 100 or even 1,000-fold increased risk of becoming transgender.
Wow.
And so that's a direct correlation. Now, you can't just say, well, we can infer from the frog studies. It's like, actually, no. I mean, look, we've got a direct suggestion of causation
in humans
in this study, so let's take it seriously. But it's such a the transgenderism issue is so integral to the left's vision of not only of transforming society, but of transforming the individual, liberating the individual from the few remaining bonds, you know. So we liberate the individual from class, and we liberate them from race and whatever, but what's left? Gender.
Right.
You liberate the individual from gender, and you can be whatever you want to be. You can be a man, you can be a woman, whatever you choose. It's a sincere decision that is totally yours. And what the scientific literature suggests is that no, actually, chemicals are messing with people's wiring. Chemicals are interfering with fundamental biological processes that begin at the moment of conception in the womb and continue through childhood and puberty into adulthood. These chemicals, like atrazine, diethyl stilbestrol, phthalates, BPA, interfere with the crucial testosterone to estrogen ratio, and they might be responsible for gender dysphoria. They might be responsible for physical disfigurements, the development of the penis and testes or vagina or whatever that isn't correct. And so, you know, individuals think that they're intersex, and then, you have an obliging liberal regime that's more than happy to hack off their genitals and turn them inside out or the opposite. And so, I mean, it's a conclusion that the left cannot face.
Right. Well, because it takes it out of the realm of cultural equality, where they say, well, being gay, being straight, being trans, being non-trans, it's all the same. Well, when it comes to nature, when it comes to animals, there's functional and there's dysfunctional, and these frogs are dysfunctional, and being transgender, you know, which wouldn't be the case, but it'd be basically the frogs were turning gay, which means they were trying to mate with other males.
Well, they were successfully mating with other males as well. So this is the crazy thing. So when atrazine was introduced to the larvae, the male larvae were turning to females
who could
then successfully mate with males and produce viable offspring. I mean, that's how crazy it was.
So literal transsexual frogs, right? So not even transgender, transsexual frogs. So it's, you know, it's not like you can say, everything is equal, each choice is as good as the other. When you're talking about science, when you're talking about nature, when you're talking about beings that are not making conscious decisions but following instinct, there is functional and dysfunctional. And what's happening is these chemicals are making dysfunctional beings.
Yeah.
And that's a very uncomfortable thing.
And what's, you know, I mean, I make a case for, although I advocate and I say, look, this is, we got the scientific evidence, you know, this is biology, this is real. There's a compassionate case to be made. This is an avoidable harm.
Right.
You know, like if we get these horrible chemicals out of the water, out of the air, out of the food supply, we can prevent people from being born thinking that they were born in the wrong body. We can prevent, you know, transgender people suffer. They really do suffer. It's an avoidable harm. I mean, it's very easy to take the, you know, to take the mick out of these crazy people and their crazy ideas. And some of them are crazy, and some of it is just a social contagion, you know, in the same way that eating disorders are social contagions, bulimia, anorexia have been cutting, that kind of stuff has been a social contagion. But there is also this biological core, and there is also this kind of biological crisis. And so if you could do something like that, why wouldn't you? Like, you're the compassionate people, aren't you? You're the people who want actually to help people. Well, Why don't you want to clean up the environment? Why don't you want to stop children being exposed to massive amounts of atrazine in the womb?
And the irony is, they would if it was the other way around. If we said, hey, we have a chemical that we can give to gay people, it'll make them straight, they would go, that's a crime against humanity. Well, it's what's happening here. It's just the other way around. And you know what? On that note, we'll go to calls after this. But clip 37 here, I was going to play this today anyway, because – As good as Maha has been, as good as RFK has been, they are doing things with pesticide that are completely inexplicable and horrible. So let's go. This is Sean Johnson, but he's talking about something we've reported on a few times. Clip 37, they're doing it on the national level. Now apparently Tennessee is trying to give basically carte blanche, total legal immunity to international pesticide companies. Let's watch.
One of the basic rights that we have as Americans, or more specifically today, Tennesseans, have the right to a court if we've been harmed. And today, here in Tennessee, the officials that you and I both elected are proposing a bill that gives immunity to, get this, foreign, not even American, pesticide companies. Now, I'm pretty sure all of us agree. I mean, this was a huge topic last year. All the pesticides, how many people do you know that have died from cancer in the past week, month, year, decade? Well, get ready, because a lot more are going to die of cancer, because that's right. Our politicians here in Tennessee are proposing a bill to give immunity to foreign pesticide corporations. That means pesticides are going to be in our water, our wild game, our food, everything. Good job, Tennessee. Thanks for taking care of the people. No normal human being thinks that's a good idea, unless you're getting paid.
There you go. I think that's the key to it right there. Sean Ryan, by the way. Sorry, Sean Johnson is the other guy. It's Alex Jones's friend. If he summed it up right there, right? No normal person would think this is a good idea. Who would want to give immunity to pesticide companies? It is insane.
Yeah, it is insane. It's worrying because, I mean, RFK Jr. for 30 years plus has been an advocate for holding these corporations accountable. And he's shone a light, a very bright light, on the iniquities of the regulatory system that allows these corporations to get away with poisoning people and with pretending that their products aren't enormously harmful. It was always going to be a central plank of Make America Healthy Again. You know, we're going to have a new regulatory system. We're going to hold these companies accountable. We're not going to let them spray the food and the environment with harmful chemicals that they know are harmful as well. There was that there's that very, very funny, very famous clip of a Bayer or a Monsanto executive, as it was then, saying, "Oh yeah, I'll drink a glass of glyphosate. There are no possible harm could come to a human being from, you know, consuming a glass of glyphosate." And then the interviewer calls the guy's bluff, and it's like, "Well, we've actually got some glyphosate here. I'll pour you a glass of glyphosate, and you can drink it just to show how safe your product is." And he's like, "Don't you be so stupid. This is ridiculous." But, I mean, they know, of course.
They know exactly what they're doing.
Of course they
100%.
Know.
Well, they covered up. They had, you know, it was revealed, I think it was Monsanto's had like a, you know, they called it like the black office, where they would go and like intimidate reporters into not covering this stuff. I mean, you don't do that if you are not doing anything wrong, right? It just seems kind of obvious. Yeah, they're scrambling. maybe on that. No, well, we'll go to calls. I don't want to keep people holding on too much. But one of the things that came up at the World Economic Forum today was water and the availability of water. And we know, if you've been paying attention to what they've been saying, You know, they're like, well, a virus is a little bit too out there, but people understand water. They understand being thirsty, and so we'll control them that way. But let's go to your calls now. Let's go to Sean in California here. Sean in California, thank you for calling in. You're on the air with myself and Dr. Charles Cornish Dale.
Good afternoon, Harrison. Hey, I'm in agreement with you regarding the World Economic Forum and all of Trump's statements. If we don't see prosecutions, it is nothing but hot air. However, now here's the however. There is a little bit of reporting that was been done either by Brianna or by yourself in the last, I'd say, 72 hours, in which when the sheriff showed up in Minneapolis, those protesters for ICE kind of calmed down. We don't need the National Guard. Sheriff deputies have all the powers we would need. And even in a blue city, the county surrounding it, if red, can direct that sheriff as to calm that, you know, area down. So this is just one of the things we the people have in our back pocket as a tool. You know, you've heard me harp on the sheriff for years. If they don't act accordingly, you vote them out.
Yep.
Get your election integrity up to check, and you can control that sheriff very easily.
So, well, and there's that awesome video from earlier this week of that sheriff being told that he was going to be, you know, withdrawn from his position. He basically said, you don't have the authority to do that, and I'm not listening. And if you try, then my citizens are going to come out and set you straight. So, yeah, sheriffs would be a great tool. Of course, the local police should be out there helping to keep peace. They're not, which is why the concept of sending in the military is even being floated. What's your take on this as a visitor here? What is your take on what's going on with Minneapolis, what Trump should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the Trump administration has to be careful. I mean, that the woman Renee Good who was shot, I mean, that was largely unavoidable, I think. I mean, we're talking with the benefit of hindsight. I mean, the man was going to be run over, but you don't want that happening. You don't want to increase the likelihood of that happening. And I do think that it's always a leftist tactic just to dial things up, you know, dial up the tension, dial up the force your opponents, you know, to kind of accelerate and to resort to tougher and tougher measures that make a confrontation and perhaps even make a fatal confrontation or certainly violence inevitable.
Yeah.
And so there's a fine line to be walked, I think, where, you know, there has to be a display of force. Of course there does, because if you back down in this situation, then the leftists are empowered and it will get worse rather than better. But at the same time, there are better and worse ways to make a display of force. I mean, it's a really unenviable position to be in. I wouldn't want to be the one directing the decisions and having to choose, well, do I send in the National Guard? What do I do? You know, how do I handle this situation? But ultimately, they do only respect force, and there does have to be some kind of display of force. There has to be a reassertion, a restoration of order. And it's not going to come from the state. It's not going to come from the governor's office. It's not going to come from within Minnesota as a whole. I think there is going to have to be, to some extent, some kind of outside intervention. But they have to do it carefully. They have to be careful.
Yeah, because obviously they will inspire, you know, greater pushback if they just go out there and start shooting protesters. Like, obviously, that's the wrong thing to do. But it's also wrong to not do anything and allow these people a free hand, because, as you point out, it is just going to get crazier and more intense. More calls on the other side. Again, I'm sitting with Raw Egg Nationalist. We will be answering your questions for the rest of the show. Go to raweggnationalist.com to get his new book, The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity, at Baby Gravy Nice. I can follow him on X. Follow me on X at Harrison H. Smith. Share those links. Flip them out yourself. Upload them yourself. Free to air. All this information is free to air. We'll be right back.
I want to thank the viewers and listeners for your endless and tireless support over the years. We try to make it easy to be supporters with fabulous products that really enrich and empower your life. A wide selection of Patriot apparel, ball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. All sorts of really cool knives, collectibles, and the most important, the best supplements you're going to find anywhere. Whatever the highest rated is, whatever has the best studies, whatever has the 5-star reviews. I mean, if you don't get our ultramethylene blue, if you don't get our bovine colostrum, that's the very best. If you don't get our Shilajit or CMOS, you're crazy. If you don't get our turmeric, that's the strongest out there. Anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory, so good for you. You're crazy. Big sales going on the side, 40% off on things like the World War II modern version trench knife, limited edition InfoWars black on white trucker hat, free with every order. And they had this thing going since Thursday. I didn't notice it until Sunday, so I had them extend it one day today. But that's it. Every order gets one of these, limited edition, in there. So get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com. But with the deals we got, we need to sell a lot of stuff to fund this operation. So do yourself a favor, Mr. Sit on the Fency. I'm not mad at you. I'm telling you. Get the methylene blue. We have the best. It is so good for you. It is so game-changing. So good for your mind. So good for all your cells. So good for telomeres. Just get a bottle of Ultra Methylene Blue. Support the broadcast. Finally, because we got even more documents in and more depositions and things, we are about to file our huge, massive civil rights suit with conspiracy against rights, all the proof, the DOJ, the CIA, the Democratic Party, you know, the law firms. I mean, this is a... And by the way, under the rules, we had to show them the suit a few weeks ago. And they went completely ape and threatened us and everything else with, you know, all the stuff they're going to do. Great. Because we got all the evidence up one side and down the other. But I'm taking on the big boys. So know this. The majority of the funding you send us buying products goes to the fight against the tyrants. And we are fully committed to that. They want this show off the air because I know what I'm talking about. That's why I get mad at the shows that are, you know, innuendo and conspiracy theories. I've never been a conspiracy theorist, folks. That's what the media calls me. That's a CIA term. I am an analyst. I'm a futurist. And I know what I'm talking about. And my guests know what they're talking about. You know my rule. Who do I have on all the time? People that are consistently right. I associate with people that got their acts together. And I can tell you, we know what we're doing. This broadcast belongs to you. You built this. It's fighting for your future, my future, all of us collectively. But we can't do it without you. Make the commitment in this ocean of media and information. The bad guys particularly hate this show because we know what we're doing. We're steering people right. But we can't take these people on without you. I need your support. Word of mouth, prayer, and financial support. And I make it damn easy. This is a win-win. All you got to do is go to thealexjonesstore.com. I'm not an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and analysis and a futurist and a father and a guy that loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer, it just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night. To quote Waylon Jennings.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Keep your hand on your gun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video. Hope that's not a signal from the crew there. I saw that in the corner. Charlotte sending me a message, I think. Welcome back, everybody. In studio with me is Dr. Charles Cornish Dale, a.k.a. Raw Egg Nationalist, at BabyGravy9 on X, rawegnationalist.com. The book is The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. We'll be taking your calls. Mm-hmm. I was just checking for headlines, see if there's any breaking news since we've started talking. Apparently, Trump is now talking about taking all of the Arctic, not just Greenland. So he's coming. So watch out, Santa. He's coming for you. Just crazy stuff, but we're going to go out to your calls now. And in fact, it looks like 22 in Washington wants to talk about Greenland, so good timing. Go ahead, 22, you're on the air.
Hi, Harrison. Hi, baby butter, goo guy, man gravy.
Raw egg nationalist.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about raw egg nationalist, sorry. I think to pull back the curtain on Greenland, I think the situation there has to do with military bases. You know, the Earth is like a water planet. It's mostly water. Mm-hmm. And it's really key to have bases there in the North Atlantic and by the Arctic because it's a zone for the subs. The submarine warfare is huge. And now with drone subs, which no one talks about, they can go way deeper. Yep. Normal subs go about like 2,000 feet. the drone subs go like 10,000 plus.
Right.
You know, and it's a total game changer for positioning for the nuclear armaments, part of the nuclear triad. If you get one of those off the coast, you know, it's a big game changer. So, you know, the U.S. only has like 9 or 11, depending how you count it, Arctic bases. Russia has like over 50, you know. Mm. Now, granted, a lot of them are like search and rescue outposts and stuff. But the Arctic's always super. I've called many times before telling you guys about the Arctic.
Yeah, any sort of missiles that were to fly into America would go over the Arctic. They wouldn't go around latitudinally. So, you know, it'd be important for missile defense. What do you think is behind the urgency, though? That's what confuses you. Like, I get that Greenland would be, a good thing to have for national security. I think it has a lot to do with the natural resources and AI, and that we need stuff out of Greenland that is necessary for building AI chips and stuff like that. But I'm shocked at the fact that this is just dominating the conversation, and that it's like, this has to get done right now. Like, what is it about Greenland that's so urgent? And I'll get your input, 22, but you have any idea about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is the melting of the Arctic ice and the opening of the Northwest Passage, and
sea lanes will be open.
Yeah, sea lanes will be open. I think there's a desire to control trade and to ensure that China and Russia don't control the trade. The rare earth thing, I think, is obviously true. I mean, regardless of whether or not, you know, rare earth minerals are harder to access in Greenland than they might be in, say, Australia or in China or whatever. The Trump administration certainly doesn't want those minerals to be controlled by China or Russia. I mean, this stuff about drone subs is fascinating, and I had no idea. I mean, you know, the US has sought to control Greenland and to purchase Greenland for a long time. I mean, this is actually a long-term geostrategic concern for the US. And, you know, I mean, after World War II, then there was serious talk of purchasing Greenland as a site for strategic bombers, and then as a site for missile defense and staging posts and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's probably multifaceted. I don't think it's just one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clearly a very, very valuable territory for a number of different reasons.
Yeah. I wonder why it's become the thing now. Yeah, I could understand if it's like, we want Greenland, and like you start negotiating. But what about you, 22 in Wisconsin? What do you think is behind the urgency of the Greenland thing?
Militarily, you know, we need that base. It's like super important. We only have one base, and it's an old one in Scotland. There's a bunch of nukes there and a submarine base. So militarily, it's key. And then also, I think for AI, Greenland has huge untapped geothermal, yeah, along with being a colder region. So you could really set up a sweet AI computer server farm up there, because you can use the cooling from the Arctic and the geothermal, because the energy matters so much for big scale AI stuff. As far as rare earths, like, there's cobalt and lithium. You know, the lithium batteries are mostly cobalt. And, you know, they call it rare earths, but there's deposits in a lot of the places, and they have much better batteries. It's kind of just a corporocrat thing that they're still slinging this old battery technology to us. But quick question for Raw Nationalist. I didn't know he was going to be on. What do you think is the best way, like a 3-step or a 10-step plan to, like, defagify the West?
That's a scientific term, I believe.
Yeah, no, that's a scientific term I'm familiar with. I think it's complicated, and I mean it's that is actually something that I touch on in the new book. You know, like I say, okay, there are things that we can do individually, and that we should do individually. I mean, you know, one of the hallmarks of being a masculine man is, you know, having discipline, taking control of your life, you know. So we want to encourage people to do that. I mean, obviously, we need something like Maha to happen. We need new regulations. We need a totally new regulatory system for harmful chemicals. We need to educate children properly. We need to, you know, make sure that children are eating the right things in schools and all that kind of stuff. But the broader problem that I raise but don't necessarily answer in the book, leave as an open question, is actually like, even if we did all of those things, does masculinity have a real future? Masculinity, as we understand it, have a real future in a a liberal future. You know, if just liberal democracy continues as it is and has been, you know, what place is there for men? What do men just have to be satisfied with, you know, being consumers, working an office job, all that kind of stuff? Or is there a different kind of existence that's possible outside the confines of liberal democracy? It's a real question, but it is a civilizational question, and this is what I try to say. It's like testosterone decline isn't a niche concern.
Right.
It's actually, this is central to civilization, to understanding civilization and its future potentially, rather than just being a niche concern.
Yeah, as well as like an existential concern. Mm. And I'll just add, I think, you know, a lot of times you hear like, you know, what do we need to do? God, how many pull-ups does the man do? I mean, I was impressed he could do one. He's in like 15. He did 20 pull-ups at like 70 years old. That is making me feel bad. I can do pull-ups. Don't worry about that. But this is something where education actually has like a very tangible positive effect. Like a lot of times, like we're dealing with these big things and it's like you hear people go, well, people just need to be educated. And you're like, well, what is educating going to do to stop a genocide happening or whatever? But in this case, education is key. If people knew what they're eating, they'll stop eating it. If they, you know, knew which purchase, you know, which products had the plastics and which ones didn't, they would make the right choice. Mm. So this is a place where literally education, especially education of moms, I mean, I'm pretty hardcore about it. My wife is like crazy about this stuff, and it makes sense. It's how you should be. And so, you know, she is constantly just researching and finding out how to protect our kids from all this stuff. And that's what you need on an individual level, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. Mothers are very important. And I think fathers and male role models are important too, because, of course, education isn't just about, you know, spurting a load of information at people. It's actually leading by example, which we were talking about. And so, I mean, one of the things that I think is so corrosive about modern day life, modern education, is the fact that actually most kids, most boys, will be educated throughout their childhood and teenage years by women.
Entirely,
The teachers are all women. I mean, you know, male teachers are in a minority.
And even if they are male teachers, they're so beaten down by the feminized system that it's not like they can express things as a male anyway. They have to sort of take the corporate sexless angle anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, so we need men. We need men in the right positions. You know, we're probably the only society in history that has actually entrusted the raising of young men to women.
Right. That makes sense.
You know, I mean, if you told a traditional tribal society, oh yeah, what you should do is you should, you know, allow the young men to be raised as men by the women. They'd be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it literally makes no sense.
You know, So we've got to do, education is very, very important, but particular kinds of education, I think.
Absolutely. You really do. You need a curmudgeonly old uncle is what you need. That's to toughen you up a little bit. I remember it was my mom's brother, my great uncle, and he would just go out of his way to be mean to me. And I know I sound probably like bitter about this, but I genuinely appreciate because I have two sisters. And so he would literally be like, I have gifts, and like they'd get like golden chains, and then I would just get literally like rusty chain, like just like something dirty. And I remember my dad at one point being like, you know, he doesn't dislike, you know why he's doing that, right? And I'm like, yeah, because I'm a boy. He's like, yeah, you're a boy, and he wants to toughen you up. And it's like, I don't know, I could just see my uncle being like, this kid's too soft, I got to be mean to him. I appreciate it, Uncle Bill, thank you.
But you know what's funny is that actually this is a genuine documented anthropological phenomenon across societies. It's called something like the joking uncle.
Right.
Where actually, you know, you see in traditional societies, the role of the uncle is to do exactly what your uncle did, is to be this kind of playful antagonist who is kind of egging on the young men or the young man to kind of develop in particular ways, and he has this jokey relationship that's very different from the relationship of the father to the son.
Of course, yeah.
It's not like young boys need that. It's actually real. Like you need to be prodded and poked, and you need to develop some resilience and a self-deprecating humor. You need to be able to laugh at yourself. You need to be able to laugh at misfortune. Yeah, your sisters are given, you know, nice presents, and you're given a piece of coal. And like, you know, if you can laugh at that as a young child and you can deal with that, then you're actually in a position where you know, you're kind of fortified for life. And that's really, you know, that's how you make people strong. And that's what liberals don't really understand, is that you don't make people strong by insulating them from harm. You make people strong by exposing them in increments to harm.
Harm that they can handle, that they can deal with.
Yeah. And then, you know, you've done that to a child. And then you get a man who can go to war and run into machine gun fire.
Right. There are just so many things like that, because, again, I just see connections to health overall and the immune system and this idea that, oh, there's a virus. Everybody go inside and shut the door. It's literally the opposite. You need exposure to this stuff in order to become strong. Wow. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. And of course, the thing about that also was the understanding that, like, just because somebody else has something doesn't mean you've been deprived of anything. Mm. Right. That was actually the lesson that he was trying to teach me, was like, look, if I give your sister something, I haven't stolen anything from you. Mm. You have not been harmed. Mm. Why aren't you happy your sister got something? And that, I think, is like a key understanding. There, over New Year's, there was in France, where all the fireworks were going off, there was a crowd was shining lasers at the people on the balconies. And it's like, what the hell? They didn't steal anything from you. It's not like if they weren't up there, you'd be up there. But there's this jealousy, envy that's so pernicious and dangerous. And I think, and I see it in my own kids, and it's hard to know how to go, look, nothing was stolen from you, kid. Mm. Your sister got something you didn't. Good for her. Be happy. Mm. I think that's a really key sort of underlying psychological thing that people are missing these days.
Yeah, and I think also what that points to, too, is that there is, I mean, we've been talking about politics as a biological phenomenon. There is a biological basis to leftism, and I think leftism harnesses particular instincts and directs them and shapes them in particular ways. And yes, I mean, kids are envious of each other, but a properly functioning right-wing society, or just a normal society, knocks that out of them and shows them how low it is, and that actually, look, okay, you know, you've got to be able to deal with this because life isn't fair. You know, like you think Christmas time isn't fair, maybe because you didn't get, you know, everything you want. Well, guess what it's going to be like when you're an adult and you're providing for a family and you have to go out and work and fight to exist. But the left really does harness these almost like they are childlike emotions. Yeah. They're childish emotions. It's like you should grow out of thinking that just because someone else has something you don't, that they've stolen it from you, that it's all a zero-sum game. But no, instead, what the left does is they allow those petty instincts that should be knocked out of people to grow and take on this monstrous form where it's actually the entirety of society needs to be upended and whole classes of people need to be murdered, need to be taken out into a field and, you know, shot and thrown in a trench because they have more than you, maybe because they've worked harder than you.
Right. But that can't be it. No,
no, of course not.
Yeah, and so they take these bad instincts, these bad impulses that we have, but they're useful to them because they can sort of twist them and go, not only are you being deprived, everybody's being deprived. So by latching onto that and pursuing that seething hatred you feel, you're a hero because you're defending all these others who don't have it. So it turns that vice into a virtue, falsely, obviously. Let's go to Hobbs in Nebraska. He has a question for you, sir. Hobbs in Nebraska, you are on air with Raw Egg Nationalist. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. It is your boy Hobbs from Roads to Liberty. As usual, open invitation if any of you guys want to come on. Harrison, please fill the good doctor in on who I am and what I do. Now, I don't have a question about cheese so much as I do, I've been listening to InfoWars most of today. I've caught most of the Good Doctor segments, especially when he's talking about how we've kind of lost sight of our ancestral diet. And it reminds me of an article that actually my mom showed me the other day. One of humanity's oldest foods, cheese. And it turns out that almost 90% of the cheese that's made in the United States is made with a synthetic GMO rennet that is patented by Pfizer.
I knew when you said 90% of cheese made in the U.S., whatever comes next
is going to be bad.
Bad, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be bad. I maybe heard about that at one point. That's disgusting.
Yeah, it's disgusting, and it's becoming more prevalent outside the US as well. And so you'll find, even in the UK, you'll find, you know, if you go on a nice cheese, I mean, I went to Paris for New Year, right, and I had some really crazy cheese. Like, I ended up, my policy actually for buying cheese was, okay, go in the fromagerie and select the cheese that looks like it's been in the bin the longest. And then
that worked out for you.
It was, yeah, they were all delicious, you know, like these horrible goat's cheeses that were like green and right, sort of suppurating, you know, but like they were so good. But so I went home and I was like, okay, I want to get some of this stuff at home. And so I was on these fancy websites, you know, looking at expensive French cheeses, and they would say, you know, natural rennet, made with natural rennet, non-GMO rennet. And yeah, so it's a big thing that people don't know about. You think, oh, cheese, well, cheese, you know, it's just milk, and
right,
it's a traditional product, and it's made in the traditional way. No, rennet has been replaced, traditional rennet extracted from the stomachs of sheep and cows, because that's what it is. It's an enzyme that makes milk coagulate and separate into curds and whey. That's been replaced by GMO. So people are eating cheese, even expensive cheese in the US, and they're consuming GMO without their knowledge. I mean, it's just really what it is it's just yet another indictment of the way that the food supply has been organized, right? It's like, right, you know, you think you're paying good money to eat some nice cheese, and you think, oh, this is healthy, you know, this is going to do me some good, and actually you are consuming GMO without your knowledge, and nobody thought that would be a bad idea, and that actually, A, it should be prevented, and actually, you know, you should preserve traditional food ways and methods of making food, and B, that consumers deserve to be informed about the choices that they're making,
right,
and deserve to have options as well, because that's the other thing, 90% of cheese. So it's like, okay, so you've really got to go out of your way in the US to get cheese that isn't made with GMO, that doesn't contain GMO. And we don't know that GMO is safe. They've never done the testing, you know. So actually, you have every legitimate reason not to want to put GMO in your body.
But they don't tell you that it's there.
No.
It just seemed, well, I guess it's obvious, because if people had the choice, they'd almost certainly choose the not GMO version. So they can't let you make that choice. That's very, very interesting. Let's go to Jay in Wisconsin. Jay in Wisconsin, thank you for calling in. You're on the air.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I just wanted to first say I love you guys very much, and I appreciate everything that you've done, and I do miss Chase. I don't know where he's been, but I do appreciate him.
We miss him, too. He's very happy in Nashville, and he's doing a new show, too. So he's good, but awesome. we miss him as well.
My whole thought was, I caught the tail end of what you were talking about with the hero's journey and George R. R. Martin and I believe it was Lord of the Rings. And I found it interesting that we used to have stories of the hero's journey and defeating the bad guy. And now I don't know if we're seeing more of it, but we're seeing either the idea of the good guy losing. I think that one of your callers a couple months ago mentioned the movie Cell. And the whole premise is this guy is trying to save his son, only to find that his son was corrupted, even though he didn't realize it, and basically he gets corrupted as well as everyone else. And all the That's the Plan movies, where the bad guys are actually winning.
And yeah, well, it's a very common thing, and I remember hearing about this, and it sort of hitting me back when even like Twilight became a thing, and it was somebody going, wait, vampires are the good guys now? And it's like, wait, that is kind of weird. Why are the blood-sucking people being celebrated? But everything's inverted now. The heroes are all the villains at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's a very, very noticeable, very, very noticeable tendency in modern storytelling.
Yeah.
Like it's something sophisticated. I mean, and I can kind of, you know, see where it's coming from. Like, actually, okay, well, let's tell a non-standard story. But when you make it the default mode of storytelling, it loses any kind of shock. It loses any kind of novelty. And it just becomes tiresome. But by becoming tiresome and so prevalent, it becomes demoralizing. And I think that is, in large part, the purpose of this kind of stuff is demoralization. It's like, no, you can't, you know, you have these tired notions about morality and about good and evil. Well, actually, they're not. You know, you're bad. You're bad for you're bad for wanting to be good because you're mistaken. Right. And by being mistaken, you're imposing this kind of idealistic vision on the world, and you think that you can, you know, you can be better than everyone else. Well, we're all down in the mud, you know, stabbing each other in the back. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible thing to want to present, you know, to the next generation.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it just goes back to what we were saying earlier, where, you know, but imagine it from the bug perspective. It's like, what? Imagine it from the orcs. It's like, okay, if you were actually imagining it from the orc point of view, your brain would just be eat, kill. Like, these people are evil. Like, what are you talking about? So, yeah, it is a ubiquitous phenomenon these days. It probably started with Wicked, which, of course, became a big Hollywood production recently, but that was sort of the first where it was like, but what if we take, Wizard of Oz, but from the witch's perspective? And that was in the 70s, but it's gone off the rails since then. Looks like we have time for one more call here. Let's go to Shay in Oklahoma, on line 9. Shay in Oklahoma, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Thank you. Hi, Harrison. This is Shay. I remember talking to you a long time ago.
I remember. Thanks for calling back.
We discussed about Pam Bondi.
Yes.
And how she's not doing a job, and now she has, what is that guy, Ratcliffe?
Yep.
We are not doing anything. We are not catching anybody. We are not putting anybody in jail. Everybody is just walking around free. And what's happening in Minneapolis and all, it's just giving more power. I understand that they got subpoenaed, and look at this. Bill Clinton and Hillary never showed up, and nothing's happening. Cuomo just talks big. Jordan just talks big. And you know what gets me? Trump just talks, oh, Lindsey Graham is great. Oh, look, this guy is great. Oh,
so I actually heard a very interesting theory about this just before the show today, that Lindsey Graham, basically that Trump, the whole, so about a week ago, we were like on the cusp of bombing Iran, right? And it was this big thing. And basically what this guy said was Trump was telling everybody, including Lindsey Graham and Mossad, basically, yeah, we're going to go to war with Iran. So they sent all their Mossad agents out to start this big, to start these big riots. And then Trump said, you know, never mind, we're not going to bomb. So we totally set up. And so maybe part of his, like, celebrating Lindsey Graham is to convince them, like, yeah, I'm totally on your side. We're totally going to do this. Only at the last minute to go, no, we're not going to do that, causing them to burn all of their networks in Iran but not actually achieve anything. So his friendship with Lindsey Graham may be a little bit of a bluff. I don't know, but I thought that was an interesting take on it. What do you think about Trump's friendship with old Lindsey?
I don't think Trump likes Lindsey Graham.
I hope not.
No, I don't think he does at all. I mean, you know, he's Mr. Art of the Deal, and obviously, you know, in public he has to kind of schmooze and stuff, but no, I don't think he likes him at all.
I sure hope not. That would be a very strange development. Raw Egg Nationalist Dr. Charles Cornish Dale at BabyGravy9, raweggnationalist.com. That's where you get the book, The Last Man, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. We'll see you tomorrow, folks.
People can use this as a teaching moment. That, you know, there's a lot of, I see a lot of these people out there who think they can imitate Alex Jones, and they have never understood the amount of work that goes into the detailed reports that you do. But the second part is, okay, if you're out there and you want to be Alex Jones or replicate Alex Jones, Alex teaches you the way to do it, just pay attention. One is learn history, understand history, understand what templates to look for. Once you understand that, you understand what the play is going to look like. And then you're just looking for who to cast in what roles, because you understand the broader course of history, how these things tend to operate, how assassinations tend to occur, how cover-ups tend to happen, how false flags occur, how staged events occur, how also could the various forms of COINTELPRO type psyops to infiltrate dissident movements to distract them from the real conspiracy into fake conspiracy in order to feed a fake conspiracies into people who otherwise would be investigating the real conspiracy. Also to act as a discrediting agent. So learn the methodologies, learn how to look at how to review sources, how to understand the psychology of the participants involved. Once you understand that, you can be much more accurate and predictive at what took place with more explanatory power and more predictive capacity. And that's what Alex does, is massive amounts of work that starts with understanding history.
come to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalist. Get Ultra Methylene Red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.